my lovely listeners, and thanks for tuning in to another episode of Glow West, where we talk about sex, sexuality, and the body. If you like the content, please pop over to iTunes and rate and review, as it helps us spread the word about the podcast. We're happy to be a part of the Tortoise Shack Network, and you can support all the great podcasts they produce at patreon.com/tortoiseshack. So today I'm super excited about my guest, and she describes her approach as liking to blow shit up. She's the Michael Bay of business, which we'll come to in a minute. So today I'm chatting with Cindy Gallup, brand and business innovator, consultant, coach and keynote speaker, and the powerhouse behind MakeLoveNotPorn.com. And she's also a huge advocate for sex tech. So hi, Cindy. Welcome along. Thanks for joining us today. How are you in New York?
I'm thrilled to be here.
Awesome. So you're a busy bee. You got a lot going on.
Yes, it's extremely challenging building a sex tech startup, unfortunately.
I can imagine, definitely. Well, if we go back to the start, well, maybe not the start for you, but the start for me, the first time I became aware of you was seeing your TEDx talk, which you started by saying you like having sex with younger men and porn has...
That wasn't a TEDx talk. That was my TED talk.
Oh, your TEDx, sorry. Yes, even better.
A big TED, yeah.
Perfect.
So that's my TED talk in 2009.
Perfect. Yeah, that's too big an audience for that, for a TEDx talk, I suppose, so in the audience. Perfect. Well, at that, you said that you like sleeping with younger men and porn has had a negative impact on that journey, because it's been functioning, I suppose, as sex education as a negative sort. So can you talk us through how that personal experience led you to setting up Make Love Not Porn?
Sure. And let me just be very clear about one thing, Caroline. The issue isn't porn. The issue is that we don't talk about sex in the real world. Many things are laid at porn store that should be laid at societies.
Absolutely.
So, Make Love Not Porn is an accident, because I never consciously, intentionally set out to do anything I now find myself doing.
Okay.
As you've said, I date younger men. And by the way, it's worth just making it clear to your audience that, you know, I am somebody who has never wanted to be married, never seen that as an end goal. I have never wanted children. I don't particularly want to be in a relationship. I date younger men for sex, and I adore being single, and I cannot wait to die alone. and I'm deliberately very public about all of these things, because we don't have enough role models in our society for women and for men that demonstrate you can live your life very differently to the way that society expects you to and still be amazingly happy. And I'm one of the happiest people I know.
Awesome.
And by the way, I also started dating younger men by accident, but that's another story. So there I was dating younger men about 12 or 13 years ago now. And I began realizing that I was encountering what happens when two things converge. And again, I stress the dual convergence, because most people think it's only one thing. Mm-hmm. I realized that I was experiencing what happens when today's total freedom of access to hardcore porn online meets our society's equally total reluctance to talk openly and honestly about sex. It's when those two factors converge that porn then becomes sex education by default in not a good way. So I found myself encountering a number of sexual behavioral memes in bed. I went, whoa, I know where that behavior is coming from. I thought, gosh, if I'm experiencing this, other people must be as well. I didn't know that, because 12, 13 years ago, nobody was talking about this. Nobody was writing about it. This was me in complete isolation as a naturally action-oriented person going, I want to do something about this. So 11 years ago, I put up, just as a little side venture, a tiny, clunky website at makelovenotporn.com that in its original iteration was just words. The construct was porn world versus real world. This is what happens in the porn world. This is what really happens in the real world. I launched it at the TED conference in 2009. as you'll have seen, I became the only TED speaker to say the words come on my face on the TED stage six times.
It's good for a business card.
The talk went viral as a result. And it drove this extraordinary global response to my tiny website that I had never anticipated. Thousands of people wrote to me from every country in the world, including Ireland, by the way, young and old, gay, straight, male, female, pouring their hearts out. And I realized I'd uncovered a huge global social issue. And so I then felt I had a personal responsibility to now take Make Love Not Porn forwards in a way that would make it much more far-reaching, helpful, and effective. And I also saw an opportunity to do what I believe in very strongly, which is that the future of business is doing good and making money simultaneously. I saw the opportunity for a big business solution to this huge untapped global need. And I use the word big deliberately because I knew that if I wanted to counter the global impact of porn as default sex ed, I would have to come up with something that at least one day had the potential to be just as mass, just as mainstream, and just as all-pervasive in our society as porn currently is. So I was setting myself a very big task.
Absolutely.
Right from the get-go, 11 years ago, because I knew that if I couldn't achieve that, it wouldn't be effective. So what I decided to do was, as I said at the start of this conversation, you know, Make Love Not Porn is not anti-porn because the issue isn't porn. The issue is that we don't talk about sex in the real world.
Yeah, very important distinction.
Amongst a host of other benefits, people would then be able to bring a real-world mindset to the viewing of what is simply produced performative entertainment. And so our tagline at Make Love Not Porn is pro-sex, pro-porn, pro-knowing the difference. And our mission is one thing only, which is to help make it easier for every single person in the world to talk openly and honestly about sex. And to do that in two respects. A, in the public domain, and by that I mean parents to children, teachers to schools, everyone to everyone. But B, even more importantly, to talk about sex openly and honestly, privately, in your intimate relationships. And the reason that's so key is because we don't talk about sex, it is an area of rampant insecurity for every single one of us.
Absolutely.
No exceptions.
Yep.
We all get vulnerable when we get naked. Sexual ego is very fragile. People therefore find it bizarrely difficult to talk about sex with the people they're actually having it with while they're actually having it. Because in that situation, you are terrified that if you say anything at all about what is going on, if you comment on the action anyway at all, you will potentially hurt the other person's feelings, you will put them off you, you will derail the encounter, you will potentially derail the entire relationship, but at the same time, you want to please your partner, you want to make them happy. Everybody wants to be good in bed, nobody knows exactly what that means, and so you will seize your cues on how to do that from anywhere you can. And if the only cues you've ever seen are in porn, because parents didn't talk to you about sex, because your school didn't teach it, because your friends aren't honest, those are the cues you're going to take to not very good effect. So given this mission of talk about it, I decided to take every dynamic in social media and apply them to this one area no other social network or platform will go in order to socialize sex. And to make real-world sex and talking about it socially acceptable and therefore ultimately just as socially shareable as anything else we share on Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter, Instagram. So 7 years ago now, I and my tiny team launched the first stage of this mission because I have a whole roadmap for the future, but I need funding to achieve it. So the first stage is MakeLoveNotPorn.tv, which is an entirely user-generated, crowdsourced video sharing platform that celebrates real-world sex. Mm. So anybody from anywhere in the world can submit to us videos of themselves having real-world sex, but we are very clear what we mean by this. We are not porn. We are not amateur. We are building a whole new category on the internet that never before existed, social sex. So our competition isn't porn, it's Facebook and YouTube. Or rather, it would be if Facebook and YouTube allowed you to socially, sexually,
instead of banned every aspect of sex.
And so social sex videos on Make Love Not Porn are not about performing for the camera. They are instead about doing what you already do on every other social platform. Capture what goes on in the real world, as it happens, spontaneously, in all its funny, messy, glorious, silly, beautiful, comical, ridiculous humanness, we curate to make sure of that. I designed Make Love Not Porn around human curation, critically important. Our curators watch every single video submitted to us from beginning to end. We only publish it if it's real. And we have a revenue-sharing business model. Our members pay to subscribe, rent, and stream social sex videos. Half that income goes to our contributors, whom we call our Make Love Not Porn stars.
Nice. So it's really ethical as well. It's not just taking it for the sake of it. But it seems like you've got a real emphasis on authenticity and vulnerability, which you don't see, A, generally mainstream porn, B, on social media a lot of the time, or C, in Hollywood so much. So it's actually refreshing to see that combination represented.
No, absolutely. And let me contextualize that in a broader context, Caroline. The young white male founders of the giant tech platforms that dominate our lives today are not the primary targets, online and offline, of harassment, abuse, sexual assault, violence, rape, revenge porn. Therefore, they did not, and they do not, proactively design for it. Those of us who are most at risk every single day, women, people of color, LGBTQ, the disabled, we design safe spaces and safe experiences. I and my team spent literally years concepting and designing Make Love Not Porn before we ever built it, because we knew if we were going to invite people to do something they'd never done before, socially share their real world sex, we had to think through every possible ramification of that to create a completely safe and trustworthy space. As a result, we operate unlike anybody else in the adult sphere, and quite frankly, unlike anybody else on the internet, full stop. So, for example, it is not possible to complete our submissions process unless your video is fully consensual, legal, everyone's over 18, we require full identifying details and two forms of government-issued visual ID for every single participant, including, by the way, if you've chosen to have somebody else behind the camera. Even if we never see them, we have to know exactly who they are. We need two forms of visual ID for them as well. Yeah. It is literally not physically possible to even complete submitting, let alone ever have published anything not fully consensual, legal.
Which is such a breath of fresh air.
Absolutely. Then when you've submitted your video, we do something nobody else does, as I said, human curation. Our curators watch every single video submitted from beginning to end. We do that just to make sure it's real, but that enables us to see everything going on. We can vouch for every single video on our platform, every single piece of content. Then when you've submitted your video, we've accepted it. We're prepared to publish it. We then build a relationship with every single one of our Make Love Not Porn stars individually. We will communicate with you using your chosen means. By the way, you can tell us whether you prefer email, Skype, WhatsApp, text, phone. You know, we will answer any questions, you know, handhold. But we begin getting to know every single one of our contributors individually. We have a relationship with every single one of our Make Love Not Porn stars. And by the way, that's because we are so grateful and so respectful and so privileged that these people are willing to share this most intimate part of their lives with us.
That's lovely.
Then, if you're at all worried about your employer, your college, it's fine to be anonymous. You can wear masks. Faces in shadow, out of frame, pixelated. You know, we have a number of tips on our blog about how to film yourselves, including a blog post called "How to Shoot a Banging Real World Sex Video Without Ever Showing Your Face." Nice. So we help with that. Probably about half of our Make Love Not Porn stars choose to be anonymous. The other half are happy showing their faces.
Okay.
Your video is only viewable on our platform. It's only viewable by our members, and it's only viewable by the members who've actually paid to rent it. And the reason we operate a rent and stream model, not a download and own, is because our commitment to our Make Love Not Porn stars is the moment anything changes, your relationship, your life, your circumstances, even just your mind, you tell us, we take your videos down, they're gone forever, they're nowhere else on the internet.
Wow.
And by the way, you can literally, you know, you might submit a video, we might publish it one day, you might change your mind overnight, we will take it down the next morning. Okay, nobody else does that.
That's so refreshing.
And we're also building, we'll bring our community offline as well as online. So our ability to do this is inhibited by our lack of funding. But when we can, we hold regular drinks gatherings where we invite our Make Love Not Porn stars to come and meet us and each other. And those are wonderful community building events. One day, Make Love Not Porn Star conventions.
Nice. I can imagine the signs for that. But you're, you know, what's really sticking out to me was I did an interview before with someone who worked as a content moderator for Pornhub in Dublin. And he just seemed traumatized, you know, like people were uploading underage material, they were uploading some bestiality, but he said it just seemed like there's no way to trace content. These were just anonymous. There's no way to even ensure that the person submitting it was actually even the person in it, or they were just trying to get money or something like that. And it, so it just seems such a, like, it's a simple approach, but it's also radically different what you're doing there. And it shouldn't be that way, but it is.
And this is a female founder with a female lens. I mean, my team is more female than male, by the way. You know, this is the innovation disruption that we bring to the tech world because, as I said earlier, we are at risk every single day. We design safe spaces and safe experiences. Imagine the entire tech world designed by us. You know, I always make the point, you know, to men, we live in a world where the default setting is always male. Men, you have no idea how much happier you would be living in a world that was 50-50 equally designed by all of us.
Mm. And I think, like, you've said a lot about the future of sex tech as female as well. And, like, we've seen that, like, a little bit if you look at the idea of, like, eco-friendly period products now that women are finally getting funding. We're having a whole new approaches to period products that haven't really been designed all that well and have destroyed the environment as well. So how do you see women getting more involved in sex tech in the future? And is there room for diversity in that as well? Are there more people of color, you know, queer women coming into that? Like, what do you see the future as being?
Right, sure. So I'm going to say to you, Caroline, what I always say to people asking this question, you are asking that question the wrong way. You are asking me that question in the passive tense, okay?
Oh, okay.
And, you know, all of this, you know, it's not will this happen, will it? All of this changes when you and I and everybody else make it change. And I don't wait for things to change. I make them change.
This is why you're the Michael Bay. You're blowing things up.
I mean, all I'm doing is what every single one of us can do. But, you know, for example, you know, whenever I speak to a tech conference, I say to the audience, I'm going to ask you to do something nobody else has ever asked you to do. Start a sex tech business. Okay, this is one area where nobody is ever encouraged to be an entrepreneur in it. And by the way, the last time I said this in Dublin was at the Dublin Tech Summit several years ago.
Right, yeah.
There was a phenomenal response. I mean, a bunch of women on Twitter and subsequently emailed me and said, oh my God, you've got me thinking. I now know what I want to start. You know, and so we have to make this shit happen. Okay, that's how it happens. It doesn't just happen through passive trends. You know, nothing is going to happen if we sit back and wait for it to happen.
Yeah, very true in so many areas as well. But one of the problems that you've highlighted quite a lot is the idea of funding and how a lot of maybe traditional male funders in tech aren't they're too scared to touch sex tech. Is that right?
Yeah. So I am, and again, I'll just contextualize this for your listeners. The one thing I had no idea of when I started Make Love Not was that I and my team would fight an enormous battle every single day to build this business. Essentially because every piece of business infrastructure any other tech startup just gets to take for granted, we can't, because the small print always says no adult content. Mm-hmm. And this is all pervasive across every single area of the business in ways that people outside the sphere do not realize. I can't get funded. I can't get banked. It took me 4 years to find one bank here in America that would allow me to open a business bank account for Make Love.
Wow. Okay.
Our biggest operational challenge is payments. PayPal will not work with adult content.
Yeah.
Stripe can't. Mainstream credit card processors won't. But beyond that, every single tech service I need to use to operate my video sharing, video stream platform, be it hosting, encoding, encrypting, etc., the terms of service always say no adult content. In every single case, I have to go to the people at the top of the company explain what I'm doing, beg to be allowed to use their service. Sometimes they let me, sometimes they don't. It's a very labor-intensive process. We had to build our entire video sharing, video stream platform from scratch, ourselves as proprietary technology, because existing streaming services will not stream adult content. I am so jealous of friends who built video startups on top of Vimeo. Quick, easy, simple, I can't do that. Even something as apparently simple as sending out our membership emails. MailChimp will not work with adult content. We were rejected by 6 or 7 email partners till we found SendGrid who would.
Okay.
We were looking 2 years ago for a UX designer for Make Love Not Porn. We put a completely standard UX designer job description up on Upwork. 20 minutes later, they took it down. They said, you cannot advertise jobs on here because you are Make Love Not Porn. Okay, that's how big the battle is. Now, the thing that would overcome all of this is money. Yeah, my biggest obstacle raising funding for Make Love Not Porn is the social dynamic that I call fear of what other people will think. Because
yeah,
it is never about what the person I'm talking to thinks. When you understand what we're doing at Make Love Not Porn and why we're doing it, nobody can argue with it. The business case is clear. It is always their fear of what they think other people will think, which operates around sex, unlike any other area. And that is why the pandemic is extremely good news for Make Love Not Porn and sex tech generally, because now is our time.
Definitely.
Now, the entire world is at home in lockdown. The world is more in need of love, intimacy, and human connection than ever before. People have plenty of time on their hands to become Make Love Not Porn stars. And our revenue-sharing business model, which I concepted 11 years ago to democratize access to income, could not be more needed in a world where so many people have been negatively financially impacted. And, you know, we are already hearing from Make Love Not Porn stars who are telling us, you know, we are so grateful for these monthly payouts, you know, because, you know, a bunch of them have lost their jobs, like everybody else.
Yeah, of course.
One Make Love Not Porn star just told us this past week, she's unemployed. She has decided to camp out for quarantine. She's camping in the desert somewhere in the US. We don't know where. She chooses to be anonymous. But basically said, you know, the money coming in is enough to survive on, which is fantastic. So,
wow, that's really good, especially when you consider like the piracy and the lack of payment that performers get from mainstream sites as well. So that's amazing.
No, I mean, when we launched, you know, I wrote a blog post, you know, 7 years ago, introducing our business model. And I titled the post, How Make Love Not Porn Can Help the Global Economy. And I began it by saying, you know all those scam ads that pop up on the internet all the time going, make $2,000 a week working from home?
Oh,
well,
yeah.
Now you can. Now you can.
You know, that wasn't quite the answer they were expecting, though.
No, exactly. And, you know, if we can raise the funding we need, we want to get to the kind of critical mass where one day your Make Love Not Porn video could get 1 million rentals at $5 per rental and we give you half that income.
That's huge. That's so huge. Like that, I can't.
I mean, we live in hope, you know. We're about a way away from that. But you know, even in our tiny bootstrapping state, because obviously part of the challenge without funding is, you know, I'm dying to take advantage of the pandemic. I have no money to promote ourselves, you know. But nevertheless, you know, we made our April payouts at the start of May, start of this month. And our highest earning Make Love Not Porn star last month made over $1,000 in a month.
Yeah,
no, I mean, that's pretty bloody helpful at the moment.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. Or at any time, it's a lot of money to a lot of people. Well, you have Irish performers on this side as well.
Sorry, Cara, they're not performers.
Oh, sorry.
Nobody's performing.
That's a good point.
Nobody's performing. This is real world sex.
What do you call them?
Make Love Not Porn stars.
Ah, that's perfect. Actually, that is a really good point of language, because I know that you've spoken about language before and how language is, you know, language is very patriarchal, you know, and especially academic language, it's male and, you know, middle class and stuff. So that, like, create a new language to refer to people, because I suppose I would have naturally just said performer because that's what you think of when it comes to porn. But this is, I like that you're like disrupting that as well and creating new language, because you've said like a lot of language around sex is very violent and gendered, and, you know, things like finger banging and pounding, it's not very soft and you know.
And so that's why, Caroline, for the benefit of your listeners, like I said earlier, every single thing we do at Make Love Not Porn has only one goal in mind: to make it easier for everybody to talk openly and honestly about sex.
Yeah.
Because we don't do that currently, we have no socially acceptable vocabulary with which to do so. The language of porn has rushed in to fill that gap, not good, for all sorts of reasons, including that, as you would expect in a male-dominated industry, the language of porn is predominantly male-generated. So the person who coined the term finger blasting did not have a vagina. Because if you have a vagina and you hear the term finger blasting, you want to cross your legs.
Yeah.
The person who coined the term getting her ass railed never got his ass railed. Pounding, banging, slamming, wrecking, destroying, all terms generated by people who do not possess the soft internal tissue to which those things are being done. So at Make Love Not Porn, we are building a new language for real world sex. We tag our videos completely differently to the way tags operate on porn sites. We tag our videos with terms like juicy, succulent. Our tag for oral is downtown. Our tag for anal is deliberately derived from the recipient's experience of anal. We tag our anal sex videos, ow, 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 hey now.
Okay.
And we do that. And we do
much
that
more realistic.
We want you to take this language and use it beyond our platform in the real world. Because this is language you can use to talk about sex in public without feeling embarrassed about what's coming out of your mouth, without having to worry about being overheard in the bar, the coffee shop. And it's language you can use to talk about what you want to do in bed in a celebratory, positive, and gender equal way. And we are also using this language to reshape people's sexual attitudes. Because, you know, Make Love Not Porn, as an utterly unique venture, we have an utterly unique power. We change people's sexual attitudes and behavior. And we have many testimonials to that from our members. So I get, to give you one example, I get called up all the time by journalists who will go, "So, Cindy, I'm writing an article about how porn addiction causes erectile dysfunction in young men." And I will go, "No, it doesn't." And they go, "What do you mean?" And I will explain that, you know, porn, as default sex education, teaches men that sex is entirely dick-centric. And it's all about how big it is, how hard it is, how long keep it up. Yeah. In the real world, men are frequently semi-erect or not erect. And so we have a tag for all of our social sex videos on Make Love Not Porn, where the man is either not erect or semi-erect. We tag those videos with a term that comes from the world of ice cream. We tag them soft serve.
Oh,
because
nice.
Soft serves are yummy and delicious.
They are. You know, and not threatening.
And again, yeah, and again, we are socializing and normalizing all of this.
Yeah.
In every single thing we do, including the language we use.
I remember, like, I've pretty much only seen a non-erection in porn, like, once. It was in Shine Louise Houston's Crash Pad series, and it was the guy, he had an erection, and then he lost it, and he couldn't come, and, you know, and then the woman said, "Do you want to stop?" And he said, "No, I'm enjoying this, let's keep going." And it was just such a breath of fresh air, instead of, like, these gigantic pounding penises that never stop for hours, and it's just not realistic.
Not realistic.
No, by the way, we love Shine Louise and Jis Lee and Pink White. Amazing. They're fantastic. Yeah. And Crash Pad series and all of that. Yeah. You know, in that context, I just want to make sure your audience knows what the ultimate goal of everything we're doing is. Because when I say to people that Make Love Not Porn's single-minded missions make it easier to talk about sex, because we don't do that currently, people don't get how massively, profoundly transformative that would be. And this is what I mean. I designed Make Love Not Porn around my own beliefs and philosophies, one which is that every life starts with you and your values. And so I readily ask people this question: what are your sexual values? And nobody can ever answer me, because we're not taught to think like that.
Yeah,
our parents bring us up to have good manners, a work ethic, sense of responsibility, accountability. Nobody ever brings us up to behave well in bed. But they should. Because in bed, values like empathy, sensitivity, generosity, kindness, honesty, respect are as important as those values are in every other area of our lives where we're actively taught to exercise them.
Absolutely.
And so this is my vision for the world. If I can get Made Love Not Porn funded to achieve our mission at scale, parents will bring their children up openly to have good sexual values and good sexual behavior, the same way that they currently bring them up to have good values and good behavior in every other area of life. We will therefore cease to bring up rapists, because the only way that you end rape culture, and this really is the only way, is by inculcating in society an openly talked about, promoted, operated, and very importantly, aspired to gold standard of what constitutes good sexual values and good sexual behavior. When we do that, we also end Me Too. We end sexual harassment, abuse, violence, all areas where the perpetrators currently rely on the fact that we do not talk about sex to
silence.
Ensure their victims will never speak up, never go to authorities, never to anybody. When we end that, we massively empower women and girls worldwide. When we do that, we create a far happier world for everybody, including men. And when we do that, we are one step closer to world peace. I talk about Make Love Not Porn as my attempt to bring about world peace, and I'm not joking. And so in that context, Caroline, what we are doing could not be more relevant in the era of Me Too. Because right now, quite rightly, everybody is talking about consent. Everybody is writing about consent. There are lots of thoughtful, nuanced, insightful think pieces out there about consent.
Yeah,
here's
sure.
the problem. Nobody knows what consent actually looks like in bed. The only way you educate people as to what is great consensual communicative sex, good sexual values and behavior, is by watching people actually having that kind of sex.
Yeah,
and
no, Make you Love have a great place in that.
Make Love Not Porn is the only place on the internet where you can do that. Every single one of our videos is an object lesson in consent, communication, good sexual values and behavior. We are literally education through demonstration. And so we call ourselves the social sex revolution. The revolutionary part is not the sex, it's the social.
And it's such a good point because, you know, I've taught some consent classes and they have their pros and cons as well. But people seem to think asking consent in sex is the least sexiest thing. And it's very much, can I touch you here? Can I touch you here? Can I touch you here? And they make it sound so unsexy. And it's like, how, you know, I have limits as a teacher and what I can say in that class. But if you were actually just able to show decent sex that had good consent shown.
No, Karen, it's like, because this is a mistake everybody's making. They think consent is going, can I do this? Can I do that? No fucking way. You know, first of all, it starts way further back than that. It starts by publicly instilling good sexual values and good sexual behavior as a concept. So you bring those to the table. And then, yeah, but it is simply about feeling your way, being empathetic and sensitive, and above all, communicating.
Yeah.
So, you know, I said at the start of this that Make Love Not Porn was an accident. What is no accident is that my background is 35 years working in advertising. I've spent 35 years working in the business of communication. I know, therefore, that everything great in life and business is born out of great communication. Sex is no different. Great sex is born out of great communication. And that is why the only reason Make Love Not Porn exists is to make it easier to talk about sex.
Yeah, no, absolutely spot on. And just so needed at the moment. But like going on to your advertising there, like, you know, we see so many adverts and they hint at sex, but they don't actually speak about sex so much. So it kind of contributes to this idea of like titillation rather than actual genuine sex and stuff. And we see that reflected then in our social media platforms as well, where there's just that silence about sex. You can kind of hint about it and, you know, like infuse your advertising campaign with hints about it and, you know, hints about the kind of lifestyle you can have. But to actually show sex on social media, like, how do you think we can break through that? You know, or is
So I've been campaigning to break through this for literally decades. So I get very frustrated with that hoary old cliche, sex sells. Because whenever anybody uses that, they are talking about sex through the male lens. Journalists call me up also and they will say, so Cindy, I want to interview you about porn. Do you feel that porn objectifies women? And I will respond, I think that any industry dominated by men at the top inevitably produces output that is objectifying, offensive, and objectionable to women, and I will then point them to the commercial advertising breaks in the Super Bowl.
Because my industry, advertising,
you know, the vast majority of advertising agency creative directors are men, a very small percentage are women. We are the primary purchasers of everything, and we are played back to ourselves in advertising through the male gaze all the fucking time. So I gave a talk 6 years ago at the Cannes International Advertising Festival on porn, youth, and brands, the biggest socio-cultural influence on young people today that we don't talk about. And I gave it to a stacked-out advertising audience. And so I said to the audience, show of hands, please. How many of you in the audience are strategic planners? So the forest of hands goes up. I said, great. Keep your hand up if you are the kind of strategic planner who, when developing a strategy for a client, writing a brief for the creative department, writes something like this. Our target audience is an 18-24-year-old young man. This is the kind of place he lives. This is the kind of job he does. This is where he likes to hang out with his friends. This is how many hours of porn he watches a week. And this is how that impacts his relationship with his girlfriend. No hands. I said to the ad industry audience, we do consumers a huge disservice when we do not bring to this universal area of human experience the same objectivity, insights, and analysis we do to every other area of consumer attitudes and behavior. Mm-hmm. And then, so I went back and spoke at Cannes a few years later on a panel called Sex, the Final Marketing Frontier.
Nice.
And what I said to the audience then was, to make my point, I said, people have sex in cars, especially in markets where, for social cultural reasons, premarital sex is frowned upon. In markets where young people live at home with their parents till they get married, which, by the way, given the economies now, the US, the UK, Ireland, or markets where whole families live together communally in households, so even husbands and wives can't find privacy to be intimate. So all around the world, a huge number of people are having a huge amount of sex in a huge number of cars. Yet the automotive industry is spectacularly failing to factor this into product design and marketing. Even more fundamentally, people have sex in bed. But the mattress industry focuses all its R&D on sleep.
Yeah.
People have sex on kitchen counters. But the kitchen industry is failing to take this into account when planning height, depth, width, comfort. The point being, there is a far broader business application of all of this than many people think. And brands are leaving money on the table when they do not embrace human sex and sexuality. And by the way, if advertising was, as it should be, a female-led industry, as should every era of popular culture be, things would be very different. What I always say to business audiences, I give people homework. I ask them, ask for a show of hands, how many of you have watched the sequel to the original Magic Mike movie, Magic Mike XXL? And I usually find a very small number of people in the audience have, and I go, okay, I want all of you to go home tonight, or at the weekend, I want you to watch Magic Mike XXL.
Okay,
because that movie is a movie about sex through the female lens. And by the way, with the male director, but nevertheless, everything is calibrated through the female lens. And that movie is joyous, uplifting, celebratory, spiritual, emotional, sensitive, you know, incredibly moving, intimate. That movie gives you some idea of how effectively sex can sell through the female lens. We have not even begun to see how sex can sell through the female lens.
Hugely. I mean, I think when people think of sex tech, they just think of sex robots, you know, and instead of all these actual realistic applications.
So I've been, again, talking about this for years. I'm sick of hearing some of my own voice on this topic. In the male-dominated tech world, as you would expect, you get a male-dominated tech media. And so when it comes to sex tech, the male-dominated tech media defaults to that side of sex tech, which it is a lot easier to talk about, which is the side it's really easy to geek out on, the hardware.
Mm-hmm.
Teledildonics, VR porn, sex robots. It's a lot more uncomfortable to talk about the era of sex tech that Make Love Not Porn operates in, which is the software.
Yes, absolutely.
Where we are all about, you know, using technology to bring people closer together in the real world. You know, and the problem is that when, therefore, all of the coverage, all of the attention, all of the promotion goes to that side of sex tech that is about driving us further and further apart into our own little virtual worlds versus the side that's all about bringing us closer together in the real world. That's which true. Side do you yeah. think is more important for the future of humanity?
Oh my gosh, together. And who has space and money for sex robots? Anyway, I'd rather have something that was much more realistic and much more intimate on a day-to-day basis. So yeah, absolutely. But do you think like that sex intimacy, I suppose, through tech is the same, not necessarily the same as in-person intimacy, but has, like you were saying, that has that real life application rather than intimacy through sex robots, so to speak?
Yeah, you know, as I said earlier, I designed Make Love Not Porn around all of my own beliefs and philosophies. I believe in using tech to make good things happen in the real world. And so Make Love Not Porn exists as sex tech that is specifically designed to make it easier to talk about sex, to bring people closer together in the real world. That's all I'm interested in, real world impact, real world effect. And that is also why I say the pandemic is now Make Love Not Porn's time. Because what the pandemic has proved is, for decades, everybody's been saying, the future is technology, the future is digital, virtual reality, augmented reality. Boy, oh boy, has the pandemic ever proven that what we really, really want and what we really value is human touch, human connection,
kindness,
love, intimacy. You know, on the other side of this, all people want is to touch each other in the real world.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure you've seen this, Caroline, on social media as much as I have. People going, I just want a hug.
Yeah. I miss absolutely. Being touch starved.
Something we did without a moment's thought, naturally and easily, now we cannot have it. People understand the value of it. And that is why, you know, what I'm doing with Make Love Not Porn is so incredibly important, because I'm not using technology as an end in itself. We have only been about using technology to make good things happen in the real world. I've been saying, again, for decades, you know, Make Love Not Porn operates in the single biggest market of them all. Not sex, not porn, the market of human happiness. And so, you know, I was talking to a research company yesterday who was saying, so Cindy, you know, what do you see people engaging more with on Make Love Not Porn because of the pandemic? And I went, it doesn't work like that. I'm just seeing more of the same. Because I knew exactly what I designed Make Love Not Porn to do 11 years ago. I knew how desperately the world needed it. And now, you know, more and more people are realizing how much they need what we have always delivered. And so nothing's changed for us. You know, we just are hoping to be able to leverage the fact that, you know, more and more people want this now. You know, despite the fact that we have no funding to provide. And can you imagine what we could do if venture capitalists flung kind of millions of dollars of funding at us to do a white bro male founders? You know, but nevertheless, we're going to do our damnedest in our own small bootstrapping way to really capitalize on the fact that the world needs what we do more than ever before now.
Oh, 100%. But then there's still those challenges. Like we saw, was it last week that the conference, the Women of Sex Tech conference, got pulled from YouTube, whereas YouTube will allow white supremacy, racism, horrendous violence, but yet they'll remove a sex tech conference from its platform. So it's like, how do you find your platforms and social media? And you know, where do you find that voice in technology?
All of us of Women of Sex Tech are just shouting about this every single fucking day. Like I said, you can't wait for things to change. You make them change. You know, and so every one of us, every single day, is fighting this battle on behalf of all of us.
Yeah, no, definitely. And just on the, I know you're not porn, you wouldn't consider yourself to be porn, but there's some people that
We are not porn.
Absolutely.
By the way, Caroline, just for the benefit of your audience, I've spent 11 years trying to get people to see all of the nuance in this era of universal human experience that we are most fucked up about. And it is evidence of how fucked up we are that people go, oh, people having sex with you must be porn. you know, in the same way, by the way, that I get enormously frustrated when people use the word porn like it's all one big homogenous mess.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely.
That's like using the word literature to say it's all the same thing.
Yeah.
The landscape of porn is as rich and infinitely varied as the landscape of literature. There are as many genres, subgenres. You know, again, I wish people wouldn't use the word porn to be all encompassing.
Well, that's kind of half my point of, you know, I was going to ask, do you get any pushback from those who term themselves to be anti-porn feminists? Because sometimes they don't really see that level of nuance. Like they lump in, like Shine Louise Houston, the feminist porn, queer porn, all as just porn, and porn that they view it as is exploitation. And some of it's like anyone having sex on screen is porn, and that's what they're going to battle against. So do you get that pushback from those kind of people?
If I do, I haven't especially seen it, because I don't, I don't engage with or look at what's going on there. I mean, quite frankly,
oh, you're not missing a lot.
But also, yeah. I and my tiny team are drowning every day just trying to keep me love not born alive. And yeah. So I don't give a shit what anybody thinks of what I'm doing. I'm doing it because every single day our members write to us and tell us how we've changed their lives. And by the way, you know, what continually blows me away is both how effectively Make Love Not Porn does what I designed it to do and how effectively it does things I never designed it to do in the first place. We hear from survivors of rape, sexual abuse, sexual assault. And by the way, we hear from both women and men who are survivors.
Of course.
Telling us that we help them reclaim their sexuality. We help them regain ownership of their bodies. You know, we helped them, you know, reclaim their sex lives because porn is too triggering to watch in that kind of scenario.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, what we hear from survivors of cancer, women who've survived breast cancer and, again, you know, have struggled with living with their bodies again and feeling sexual again, and tell us we've really helped in that way. Every day we see how profound an impact we're having. And so my time and energy and bandwidth is fully focused on keeping Make Love Not Porn alive and growing it.
Yeah, which is a healthier way to direct your energy in that sense. So, yeah, the anti-porn, pro-porn arguments are an interesting battle that's been going on for a while. So where do you see, hopefully now, like, you know, you've mentioned that COVID is hopefully going to change things and refocus funders as well. Do you think that they will be more open now? Do you think that they are being, and do you think there's more space for women to make those decisions in funding decisions now as well?
Well, again, as I keep saying in my interviews on every topic, there are two dynamics at play. A, there is the pandemic. And, you know, the pandemic has ensured the world will never be the same again. And that is very good news for those of us who are never the status quo to begin with. Because, you know, for years, journalists have been saying to me, so, Cindy, you know, are you seeing the kind of change you want to see in gender equality, diversity, inclusion happen? And I go, no. And they go, oh, why? And I go, because at the top of our industry is a closed loop of white guys talking to white guys about the white guys. And that's a whole area we don't have time for. So then they go, so, Cindy, you know, what do you think will make the kind of change you want to see happen? And I've been saying for years, only one thing, total, complete, utter fucking disaster. And now we have it.
We do, yeah, in spades.
It is only when things break down, this utterly and completely, that allows new models and new ways of doing things to emerge that never would have otherwise. So, A, there is the dynamic of the pandemic is causing the complete breakdown of the old world order. That's a huge opportunity. But B, there is what each one of us then does on top of that to leverage the fucking shit out of it. I'm leveraging the fucking shit out of the pandemic for Make Love Not Porn. I recommend that everybody else do the same thing so that they drive the change they want to see happen.
I feel really fired up now. I'm like, yeah, let's go destroy some shit. So awesome. I suppose that's probably a good point to wrap up on, because that's some pretty awesome words of inspiration there. So just go destroy some shit and make the change. It's like Gandhi on steroids and with more porn and sex. And, sex.
And can I just say to your listeners, please, if you liked what you've heard, please join Make Love Not Porn and support us by taking out a monthly subscription. They start at just $10 a month. Support us by buying our merchandise, like this very attractive t-shirt you can't see that I'm wearing right now, consider becoming a Make Love Not Porn star. You get 50% of all rentals and subscriptions of your video. And if anybody out there knows anybody who wants to fund a not just pandemic-proof, but pandemic-accelerated startup, send them my way, send them to makelovenotporn.com.
Absolutely. And so is it that same handle on your social medias as well? People can pop over and find you there?
Yep, you can find me in Make Love Not Porn. We are on Twitter, we are at Cindy Gallup at Make Love Not Porn. On Instagram, we are at Cindy Gallup at Make Love Not Porn. Our YouTube channel is Make Love Not Porn TV. You can find me on LinkedIn. You can find me on Facebook, and our Facebook page is MLNPTV.
Okay, that's a good memory that you have to remember all them. Awesome. Listen, thank you so much, Cindy. And if I have any questions from readers, I'll send them, or listeners, I'll send them on your way as well. But like, thank you so much and for inspiring us all. And hopefully, you know, the Irish listeners will come forward and we'll take up even more chunks of Make Love Not Porn. So awesome. Listen, thank you so much for your time today. That's us for today, everyone. If you like the podcast, again, don't forget to pop on and rate and review us if you can. And again, if you want to support via Patreon, it's patreon.com/tortoiseshack, and you can find us on Twitter at glow_west_ and at Instagram at glowwestinsta, all one word, where we have some fun competitions sometimes and some fun giveaways. Thank you for your time. Bye.